today joining me is quite simply one of the most entertaining men in pro wrestling history, and with this he brings a wealth of knowledge too. He will be heading over here to the UK in February 2014, which we will be talking about later on. Yes, listeners, today I'm joined by the one and only Jim Cornette. So, first off, Jim, how are you today, my friends?
Stu, very good, thank you. I'm a little sniffly. We have an ice storm going on here in Louisville, Kentucky, but I've been anxiously awaiting this interview, like I'm anxiously awaiting my first ever trip to the United Kingdom coming up in February, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in the course of the program.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do that later on. So, like I say, Jim, you know, this is the Indie Corner. I want to talk to you about your days in the world of, you know, independent wrestling, more specifically Ring of Honor. I mean, me myself, you know, I've been a follower of Ring of Honor since the very beginning. How aware of you, you know, how aware of Ring of Honor were you before you actually began working for them?
Very aware from the start because, you know, obviously I was working in Ohio Valley Wrestling here in Louisville. We were doing the WWE developmental program, but I always tried to keep up on, you know, who the young talent was in the business and you know, who was doing well or not doing well, as the case may be, promoting their own shows since I was in the business. And then I was contacted first to work for Ring of Honor back in 2004, and I did a series of interview videos with some stars like Bobby Heenan and Bill Watts,
yeah.
and Bruno, yes, yeah, the straight shooting yeah. series, Bruno Sammartino and Percy Pringle, Paul Bearer, and et cetera. And I also got a chance to manage opposite Bobby Heenan, who is my hero and idol as a manager, and that was a tremendous amount of fun. And then I got away from him for a few years because I was also with TNA, and at the point that they had made the TNA had pulled the talent from Ring of Honor as far as they couldn't appear on DVD or internet pay-per-view or television or whatever the case may be. And even though my deal was different, if they couldn't have Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Abyss and those guys, I didn't figure they wouldn't see Jim Cornette show up. So, but then in 2009, I started working again for him and a lot more closely because Kerry Silkin, the former owner and operator of Ring of Honor, has been a friend of mine for, you know, since I started working with them. And that was when I was, you know, really digging into my efforts to try to get the Ring of Honor on broadcast mainstream television here in the United States. And then the sale to Sinclair Broadcasting happened. And then things did not go according to my grand plan. And so for the past year, I have taken a nice long sabbatical from pro wrestling, and I've enjoyed myself immensely doing so.
Yeah, I mean, that was my next question. So when was it you first worked for Ring of Honor, and in what respect? But you've obviously just covered that. When you first got to Ring of Honor, obviously it was wrestling on a smaller scale compared to your days in WWE, etc. But for talent, you know, it was right up there with the very best. What was your first impressions of the company as a whole, from the owners to the talent when you first arrived?
Well, I was always impressed, and you know, it wasn't a case because, I mean, I've been used to wrestling big and small for the past 30 years. I've main evented WrestleMania in Madison Square Garden, and I've worked the Dyersburg, Tennessee County Fair in front of 200 people. And everything in between. So I've run my own companies and so the scale was not an issue with me because I saw that it could get bigger. Now in the early days, to be honest, a lot of the Ring of Honor talent was, you know, they were still puppies with big paws, as we say over here. They were young, the Briscoes. I saw them when they were like 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And I said, they, you know, they've got a lot of piss and vinegar in them, and they may not be polished now, but you could tell that there was potential, which they later fulfilled. And the same thing with guys like Roderick Strong and Samoa Joe, who I saw as you know, a fairly young wrestler, and then saw him mature, and, you know, AJ Styles, just all those guys, all the guys that have gone through Ring of Honor and wrestling in general over the past 10 years, you know, you could see that a lot of them had potential. And I think that Ring of Honor over the last 5, 6, 7 years really blossomed into something that, instead of just being another independent wrestling organization, you know, really made a name for themselves. And that's why I was enamored of the project. And, you know, I liked Kerry, and I liked that there was somebody that was presenting wrestling on a serious, credible basis as athletics instead of, you know, showbiz. Yeah. So it was a perfect fit for me at the time.
Yeah, I mean, overall, you know, there are a number of things in Ring of Honor that you're not over keen on. One was a chap by the name of Colt Cabana. I mean, no, it's not a witch hunt for Cabana, but it's not.
No, we want people to start carrying torches you know, pulling out knives and switchblades and things.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, it's no secret to anyone listening to this right now. You know, I'm not Cabana's biggest fan, but, you know, it used to be just his wrestling, but now it's other stuff. But anyway, away from my views on him. I mean, you know, you coined the phrase, funny doesn't equal money. Please explain to us, you know, your views on Colt Cabana.
Well, actually, I didn't coin that phrase. That phrase is actually older than I am, and I'm 52. In the wrestling business, funny don't draw money. Yeah. Now, you can have organic comedy, you know, based on the personalities and funny incidents that happen. Yeah, you got to lighten things up every once in a while. But, you know, we'll put the Colt thing to rest and then we'll move on to more important topics. But it's taken on a life of its own. So, Jim Cornette don't like Colt Cabana. Well, I didn't dislike Colt Cabana as a person. I never cussed his mother, never wanted anything bad to happen to him, have him catch any terminal illnesses or anything. But when we were putting Ring of Honor together and the sale to Sinclair Broadcasting, Sinclair wanted us to put all of the talent that we were going to feature on television under contract. Exclusive contract. They couldn't appear on other pay-per-views or television programs. They could still appear on other independent wrestling events. Well, the guys that we had big plans for that we wanted to use on top, we offered contracts to. We did not offer Colt Cabana a contract because it would have been detrimental for both of us. Because for one thing, Colt has a lot of projects and things that he does that we didn't have a spot for Colt Cabana where we could offer him enough money to justify him signing an exclusive contract with us and be used, you know, basically as a middle card wrestler or you know, on a few shows here and there. And not only had Colt been in Ring of Honor for, gosh, 3 or 4 years at that point, actually he was interrupted by a developmental stint. And I don't know why the WWF didn't keep him. He's perfect for them. But he's an entertainment wrestler. But he'd been in Ring of Honor for several years. We wanted to lock in the talent that we needed to use on top and then bring in an influx of either new young talent that we could groom or more mainstream names that were veterans that could lead the young guys and have a nice combination. Colt didn't figure into the plans. And so we did not offer him a contract, and he's been in a snit about it apparently ever since. But, you know, to be honest, he don't fit the suit. We were looking at presenting pro wrestling as a credible, athletic, sports-based presentation with elements of mixed martial arts and an overall seriously competitive tone. And Colt is a funny guy. He's a comedian, and there's not that there's anything wrong with that, but we didn't want, and I was not opposed strenuously or at all in this thinking by anybody else in the company. We did not want a guy who does comedy commentary over bad wrestling matches and mocks the professional wrestling industry, you know, on our program that we're trying to be serious about. It just didn't fit. It wasn't the presentation we were going for, you know, so that's it. And somehow it's taken on a life of its own that I'm desperate enemies with Colt Cabana. I'm not mad at Colt Cabana. I'm just not a fan of his comedic stylings in a wrestling ring and making fun of the wrestling business while still trying to be in it. And we didn't have a spot for him in Ring of Honor. And how, on the fans' point of view, some fans like Colt and some fans really don't like Colt. He's a very polarizing figure. But the point is, in another case, he had been there for several years, and how can we miss you if you don't go away? We can't just keep adding people. We have to subtract some people. There has to be a changeover in talent. And that was one of the changeovers. And that's it.
Fair enough. Something that's just sprung to mind. Was there any type of issue with yourself and Al Generico? I mean, the word is that had been going around for the last couple of years. You know, you were not keen on guys in masks, at least in Ring of Honor. Is there any truth to that at all?
Actually, no. It doesn't have anything to do with the mask, I'll tell you. As I clear my throat again. With El Generico, on a professional basis, I think he's a fantastic worker in the ring. I think he sells better than anybody in the business today. He has fiery comebacks. He doesn't look very impressive physically, but once again, not everybody has to be a bodybuilder. He is in good shape, and that's one thing. I think, once again, with Ring of Honor's presentation, if you're going to play a professional athlete on television, you need to look the part. That's why they don't cast me in the Brad Pitt roles in the movies, because I don't look like Brad fucking Pitt. But El Generico was a great athlete, and his work is great. My issue with him professionally is that on a number of occasions, we went to him and said, all right, you know, here's the thing. We are fixing to debut a television program on 70-something broadcast television stations around the country. We like your work, but number one, you don't speak. We cannot have a mute baby face when we're going to be producing this, you know, broad-based television program. Is there some way that you can communicate? Do you want to speak Spanish? I don't care if you speak Swahili, whatever. You just need to learn how to talk and present your gimmick verbally as well as physically. And he resisted most of the overtures we made to do that. And now, of course, he's for the WWF for the right amount of money. He takes the mask off. He talks. He quacks like a duck. He does whatever they want. But there was resistance there. Also, to be honest, once again, there's great talent there, but is that the perfect gimmick for a guy in Ring of Honor? I don't know. I think that the mainstream fan who had never heard of El Generico, who'd be seeing this television program for the first time, would look and go, why is that obviously redheaded, skinny, pale white guy trying to act Mexican, and what's the whole deal? Now, of course, the fans love him, and we recognize that also. So on several occasions, first when Sinclair bought the company, we offered him a one-year contract. He was already one of the higher-paid guys in the company. And on the day that everybody was signing their contracts, he decided to call me in delirious out in the hallway and try to renegotiate. We said, look, we're not even on television yet. Sign for a year. Trust us to do as much with you as we can and make you more valuable. And we'll talk about a raise later on when already you're flying from another country. You're one of the higher paid guys, and there had been a few other perks that he was given in terms of paperwork and et cetera. And he wouldn't sign the contract as it existed, so we said, all right, either don't sign the contract as it exists, or sign the contract for 6 months if you don't want to tie yourself up for a year. So he signed for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, which was final battle, we told him we wanted to re-sign him, and that we had appreciated his work and thought that it was very good. And he said, oh, I'm going overseas and I'll get back with you. And then began a long chain of events where Delirious would try to email him or try to get a hold of him, and we couldn't pin him down because he apparently thought, and as rightfully so eventually, that he was going to the WWE. Okay, that's fine, but you know, don't make us chase you all over the place. So he wasn't anxious to sign a contract, and we were tired of asking him to sign a contract, so we went in other directions, and then everybody went crazy. Oh, they won't use El Generico! Well, we couldn't use him if he wasn't in the same – you need to be in the same country first, and also you need to make some kind of commitment to us when we're offering you one before we're going to use you in main event positions. So that's that story.
Yeah, that's to the point, obviously, it clears a lot up.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of things could be cleared up if anybody just didn't take and run with either what a disgruntled wrestler says or what somebody makes up and puts on the internet because they think they know the scoop when they weren't in on a conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it can be an evil tool, the internet. But that's a sign. I've heard shed loads of audio yourself over the years, and I don't think I've ever heard the question asked about the Generico situation. So,
well, no, because Steen takes up also all of the wind in the room, all the oxygen in the room. Steen does because and they were kind of joined at the hip. Also, Steen was pretty much Generico's agent.
he's the next topic of discussion.
Well, then let's jump right into it. So they're both joined at the hip because they're both French Canadian. They're both from Montreal. Yeah. They're longtime friends.
Oh, Generico's not from Mexico, then.
No, I'm sorry. I've just revealed something that shocked to the world at large. But, you know, once again, and also there was a situation, to be quite perfectly honest, and why, you know, we're just talking among friends here and several hundred thousand of our immediate, you know, listeners. There was a situation with when I first started working with Ring of Honor back in 2009, Gabe Sapolsky, who had been the previous booker, had told Adam Pearce, who was the booker then, you will spend the majority of your time dealing with Kevin Steen and El Generico and their various issues and ideas and problems and complaints and ephemera. And Adam Pearce, who was the booker at that time, told me that certainly had been true, and he had found that to be the case. And then when Adam Pearce was removed as Booker, and Delirious was installed as Booker. He confirmed to me that that was also the case as well, that you will spend most of your time dealing with Kevin Steen and El Generico and their various issues and problems and suggestions and et cetera. And with Steen, there seemed that he complains very heavily about how he was used in Ring of Honor. So let's go over just his last 18 months in Ring of Honor. He was brought back with a tremendous television push, and I'll get to the beginning of this story in a minute, but he was brought back with a tremendous television push, given all the television time in the world, numerous live promos, kept undefeated, won the world championship, defended the world championship more than the last three champions put together. Went undefeated for 9 months, was in every main event, got a new contract, a raise, and all the other things that he had basically asked for or wanted, and then complained about how we used him. Here was the problem from the start. I thought that Kevin Steen and El Generico's program of matches, while they were exciting, while they were obviously of interest to the fans, often went too far in terms of what we were trying to do at the time, which was sell the company or get the company on mainstream television or sell the company to someone who could get it on mainstream television, and that was with Kerry Silkin's blessing and approval. And when these guys either went too far with the violence or the blood or whatever, or when they went too far with the ladders and the tables and the chairs and the stunts, whether for their own personal preservation, whether for the preservation of the rest of the card, how can you follow guys who are taking bumps off multiple ladders through multiple tables? It wasn't the product that we wanted to present or the risks that we wanted guys to take. And also, it wasn't all just about Kevin Steen and El Generico. There were 18 other guys on the card, many of them quite talented. So when we didn't just feature everything that they wanted to do, they were not happy about it. Because I've come to find out that in my opinion, at least Kevin is not in the business to make money. Kevin is in the business to have his style of great match and be the center of attention, and that's fine. But we were trying to be in business to make money. So with Kevin Steen, after this year-long program with El Generico was coming to a conclusion, what we wanted from Kevin was to take 6 months off, go home, get in the gym, lose some weight because he was drastically overweight. It was going to affect his health and his body, as well as the fact that he once again didn't look like a professional athlete that he was playing on television. We knew that he could work, we knew that he had a tremendous dedication to the business, and we knew that he could cut a great promo. So since he'd been there for 4 years, we wanted him to lose the match with El Generico and bring their issue to a resolution with the nice guy winning, good triumphs over evil, and for Kevin to take 6 months off, at which point in time we arranged with Kerry Silkin to put him on the payoff sheet for the shows that Ring of Honor did run, not his full pay, but he didn't have to leave his house, with the thought that he would come back in 6 months, 40 pounds lighter, with his beard shaved, cleaned up with a lean, mean look, and he would get a big push as a psychopathic guy with anger management issues and a violent streak who was vulgar and out of control and had a grudge against the company, coming back to seek revenge. So Kevin went home for 6 months, kicking and screaming every step of the way. Now, during that 6 months, we got the Sinclair Broadcasting sale done. And so in June, when we brought Kevin back to New York, he came back about 25 or 30 pounds lighter, not 40, but it was a start at least. We told him that since we were going on the air on television in September, that rather than just have him come back then not on television and become one of the boys that is introduced when the TV show is introduced, that we would hold him off for a few months. We would have him make key appearances trying to get back into Ring of Honor or trying to screw with Ring of Honor. And then when the television show went on the air, he would be the first major talent that we introduced coming in and tell his backstory. So he would get a big TV push. And, of course, he went into a snit about this because he wanted to come back and play in his sandbox, so he went back home and gained all the weight that he'd lost. And when he comes back, we know that he still can work and he still can talk and he's still a French-Canadian pain in the ass to deal with on a professional basis. And you can ask any booker of Ring of Honor in history, if that's the case, and they will say yes. But we agreed to use him in the same capacity that we had originally told him we would, which was as a guy with anger management issues coming back with a grudge against the company, etc., and that's exactly what happened. And then he didn't like the way that we did that. And then we told him we were going to put the world title on him, and we did it, and I don't even know if he liked the way we did that. And he got a new contract with a modest raise, and he got more of his paperwork taken care of, and he was consulted on most everything, and we let him make some of his changes, but not all of them, because he would have rewritten everything we ever asked him to do from scratch if we had. And we kept him undefeated for 9 months, put him in the main event of everything, and then right as he was losing the title, his body was starting to break down because he had gained even more weight, and he's now grossly overweight. And since then, he's been oftentimes put in tag team matches where it's not such a burden on him because, gosh, who would have known 3 years ago and could have told him, you know, if you lose weight the way you work, your career will last longer. But he has a lot of dedication to the wrestling business but does not have a lot of dedication to his appearance. And that's why that there was controversy because we didn't feel that he fit the picture. Once again, the Ring of Honor fans knew him and loved him. The independent wrestling fans knew him and loved him. But for the wider audience on television who would see him for the first time when they're looking at Davey Richards and they're looking at Eddie Edwards and they're looking at the Briscoes and they're looking at Jay Lethal and they're looking at all these well-conditioned professional athletes and the world champion is that fat guy wearing bike shorts and a T-shirt. So, you know, that there was issues there. But, you know, I'm sorry Kevin feels that he's been disrespected, but, you know, I'm sorry he's not in the wrestling business to be in the big-time wrestling business. He's in the wrestling business to be the champion in front of 500 people in a rec center. And that's the problem. So there you go.
You mentioned someone just now who I want to talk about. Someone you seem to put a lot of stock in was Davey Richards. I mean, Davey was the opposite of what sports entertainment is. You know, he's an excellent mechanic in the ring, but would get a lot of, shall we say, heat for taking his character and wrestling as a whole too seriously. Now, for me personally,
You should have been on the phone when Davey called me up and said, why do I have to lose to Kevin Steen? He won't even get in a gym.
Yeah, I have heard that comment. I mean, just getting back to this, you know, like saying he's got this reputation taking it too seriously. For me personally, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that. But tell us, you know, what you saw in Davey and what made you want to make him the focal point when you had the booking Ring of Honor.
Well, everybody that has been successful in wrestling through history has taken themselves and their character, as they say, I prefer the term gimmick, seriously. To a fault. However, with Davey, you know, Davey's a great athlete. Davey's a special performer. I knew it the first time that I saw him. He does some things that other people can't do. He has a drive and determination inside the ring, a work ethic second to none inside the ring. He is completely opposite from a lot of the other guys who you don't have to worry about them outside the ring, but once they get in the ring, sometimes you have to worry about what they do. He's the exact opposite. Once you get him in the ring, he's gold. It's just getting him in the ring, and then from the time he gets out of it back into the next ring again. Davey Richards, I love him, but he talks like a lot of people fart. You don't know when it's coming. You don't know what it's going to smell like. You don't know what it's going to consist of. And we have tried and tried to tell Davey that he does himself a disservice with some of the comments that he makes and some of the things that he does, that because he does things and says things without thinking. And if you got a lot of talent, you're always going to get a number of chances, more than the average schmo. But Davey got a lot of chances to be a leader in the locker room, to be a champion outside the ring as well as in it. And Davey succeeded with flying colors inside the ring and flunked with a capital F outside the ring. And I hope and wish that someday he can just get his head around the business of wrestling and the business of not making yourself look bad with things you say and do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he did a shoot into high spots. I mean, would it be fair to say some of the comments that he made annoyed you like they annoyed Kevin Steen?
Well, I don't know because I didn't see it, but I mean, I saw a few excerpts because the High Spots asshole, every time somebody does knock me and anything, if it's a 2-hour interview and there's one bad line about me, he's going to put it in the trailer. But, I, you know, that's the thing is, once again, it goes back to Davey Richards did not understand the business of the wrestling business.
Yeah.
And you could try to do things for Davey, but unfortunately, Davey sometimes didn't recognize what you were trying to do for him. And it's the same as some of these other guys, thinking you're trying to do something against them. You're trying to save them from themselves in some cases. But it takes experience sometimes to realize these things. And Davey has recently had some experiences where he's limited some of his options. And I hope things go well with the WWE. And then you got Eddie Edwards, who's the greatest professional and in and out of the ring and the easiest person to deal with and the guy that you can trust. And see, that's another thing. A lot of people don't realize, because they're not smart to the business of the wrestling business, and this is for a lot of the fans, You also put guys in positions of importance in your company that you can count on outside the ring as well as inside the ring. You give me a Jay Lethal that can always show up on time for his media appearances and always be personable with anybody from sponsors to guests to fans, and represents the company in commercials and represents the company well in broadcast meetings and television station affiliate meetings. A guy like Eddie Edwards, who does the same thing to the best of his ability. There's never any problems. There's never any troubles. There's never any bad news you get. You put those guys in positions of importance in your company inside the ring because of the fact that you can trust them in the positions of importance that those spots inside the ring give them outside the ring. And if you got a guy who don't show up on time or who talks out of both sides of his neck, as Ernie Ladd would say, or who is a pain in the ass constantly or not easy to deal with or always basically involved in some type of negative vibe, instead of positive, you don't want to put them in main event spots in the ring because those also require main event spots outside the ring. That's the business of the wrestling business. But nobody knows that's not been in the business. So they just look at what they see on television and go, well, why isn't this guy being used better? Well, possibly because he's a pain in the ass.
I mean, like back when it happened, when Eddie first won, I mean, it was a bit of a swerve to all the fans because none of us expect. I know I didn't expect it. You know, first Eddie won the TV title before Davey. Davey didn't end up winning it, of course. Then Eddie won the world title before Davey, and everyone was just saying, "Oh, I can't believe, you know, it's gone to Eddie first." And I mean, what was the story behind that?
That created a very interesting conflict, didn't it? Of the tag team, the guy that got all the praise and got all the chance and got all the publicity, all of a sudden his partner keeps winning things in front of him and ahead of him, and that eventually culminated in the first showdown at Best in the World in June in New York a few years ago with Davey and Eddie for the title, where Davey finally won the title from his partner. It was a very emotional moment, and it was probably more emotional and more exciting than any other matchup that could have been presented at the time because of those dynamics that you just mentioned. And that's why that it sold out the Hammerstein Ballroom, and it also did the record number of pay-per-views to this day, since they're out of the pay-per-view business, that Ring of Honor did on the internet. And it got a lot of attention, and somehow people just said, well, wasn't it great that it just worked out that way? Yeah, it was. We didn't think about it at all. It just worked out that way.
Yeah, one final little bit on Davey. I mean, obviously he's done some stuff for NXT, /WWE, and obviously it looks like it's where him and Eddie are heading in the next couple of weeks or so. But you know, he's recently been removed from the Final Battle show by Ring of Honor, apparently again due to comments in another interview from right here in the UK for Online Magazine over here.
Right there in the UK, yeah. as Mick Foley would say. I did Mick Foley's show last night, by the way. If you get a chance to see him, he's brilliantly funny.
Yeah.
And with his one-man show. And hopefully I can follow that by being brilliantly funny in the United Kingdom for my one-man show in February in Manchester, Birmingham, and London at Leicester Square Theatre in Cardiff, Wales, and possibly a Scotland date being opened up. And for more information, go to jimcornette.com and click on appearances, or you folks in the UK over there, jimcornettelive.co.uk. Tickets, as they say, are on sale now. But anyway, continue your thoughts, Stu.
Oh, no, I was just bewildered by where that came from out of nowhere, which would have been, we would have covered that anyway.
But I know, well, it just seemed like a place to put it in, yeah. You know. But
no, I mean, like I was saying, obviously, you've already covered about the fact of, you know, David's mouth would move before his brain would kick into gear. And like I say, he's done this interview. He's then come out and said, my words have been misconstrued and twisted and stuff like that. And obviously, the guy who did the interview said, well, I've got the original recording if it ever needed and stuff like that.
Let me hop in. I wasn't involved. Obviously, I've not been involved with Ring of Honor for a year, and I wasn't involved in the decision to remove him from Final Battle, nor was I involved in the office when he did the interview originally. But while I'm not privy to the inside discussions anymore, I think it would be safe to say that steam rose out of Sinclair Broadcasting's headquarters when they heard Davey's comments, because it's not like it's the first time, it's not like it's the third time, it's not like it's the fifth time that his comments have been misconstrued and he's been misquoted, and he genuinely means, when he apologizes it, he genuinely means it. However, he then continues, and somebody catches him on a bad day, and he says other things that live to bite him in the ass. And, you know, the thing is, I've knocked many companies, but not while I was actually working for them. Because you take the bad with the good. If you want to be someplace, you take the bad with the good and try to concentrate on the positive. I managed to make it for 3 years coexisting with Vince Russo in TNA without actually publicly blistering him and telling people what I really thought of him, because it would have been negative for the company at large and affected other people. Now, yeah. However, having said that, no, I don't think Davey was misquoted. I think Davey said what he really meant, and he just didn't think before he said it. And then, obviously, Sinclair Broadcasting got mad at him and decided that, why has this guy been one of our top paid wrestlers for the past 3 years and one of our top featured wrestlers? And we have gone out of our way on numerous occasions to help him out or to forgive him for other incidents. And then he does this. What the heck? Let's move on. And that's probably what happened.
Yeah. So what I want to talk about now is internet pay-per-views, or shall I say, you know, the ridiculousness, if that's a word, of Ring of Honor trying to stream an iPay-per-view. And I mean, numerous times, you know, they've failed and being able to provide the paying fans a watchable iPay-per-view stream. I mean, and it wears thin eventually, saying obviously technical problems when you've got other indies doing iPay-per-views on a much smaller budget. And to be honest, you know, I've been embarrassed for Ring of Honor over the years trying to defend them.
Oh, you think, I mean, you've been embarrassed?
I was just going to say, what's your take on this? Well, shambles is what it is.
Well, the one defense that I will give them before I proceed to tear them a new asshole is that the other indies do these pay-per-views and they come off fairly flawlessly because of a couple of reasons. Number one, they're only getting 100 or 200 or 300 people ordering them to begin with, and that's very low traffic. And secondly, is they're putting on the most basic a show where they point a camera at the ring and turn it on. There's no graphics, there's no replays, there's no effort to make it an actual program. However, having said that, one of the things then, actually the revenue stream that I thought would take off the quickest after the Sinclair Broadcasting's purchase of Ring of Honor was the internet pay-per-views, because my original vision for that was to have a state-of-the-art website. Not something that, you know, you didn't have to go to like the NBA or the NFL or somebody, but maybe somebody that does major college sports franchises websites where they sell merchandise and have video, whatever the case. A nice state-of-the-art website that could handle the internet pay-per-views and video on demand, because Ring of Honor was a very internet-oriented company. And the first thing we need to do was get away from Go Fight Live, who I nicknamed Go Fuck Yourself, because I knew the guy that running it was incompetent, and I knew that the people that they sent to these shows obviously were barely able to operate the prosumer equipment that they were bringing with them. And that's the first thing that we needed to do when we were not just funded by a single individual, but by a large broadcasting company. Or at least a large owner of television stations, even if they did not broadcast actual programming until Ring of Honor. Get a state-of-the-art website, get broadcast quality equipment, and bring this in-house and do it properly. And what we got was, unfortunately, the one mistake that was made with Ring of Honor that led to its ultimate downfall of everything was they hired a kid named Greg Gilliland, not to mention any names, but that was what his fucking name was. He was a 26-year-old kid from the accounting department to be the office manager, and he proceeded to fuck the whole thing up. His college buddies built the website, and so they couldn't even sell DVDs on the website properly for the first couple of months, and people got mad about that. And he decided that it was too expensive to do things to get away from Go Fight Live. They were going to stick with Go Fight Live because they promised they'd do better. Well, I know a lot of guys promise their wives they won't cheat again. And so the combination of sticking with Go Fight Live and having a shitty website pretty much doomed us. And we also didn't get our broadcast quality equipment, even cameras, for the first year. So we were still putting out a substandard-looking product that people might have accepted coming from an individual like Kerry Silkin, but not from a major corporation like Sinclair Broadcasting. And they weren't able to see it, so naturally there was consternation over that because it kept going off the air. And then when finally they took it in-house, they didn't do the testing properly, and the website wasn't right, and they didn't have their shit together, and went off the air again when we had a sold-out house of 1,500 people in Toronto for the biggest show that Ring of Honor had ever run. And that pretty much shot people's confidence in us, between the fact that the production looked substandard, between the fact that costs were being skimped on the television show and the fucking pay-per-views, between the fact that the website still, to me, looks like 50 miles of bad road, and this prick who I named but won't name again was alienating everyone else in the company with not only his know-it-all attitude, but his penny-pinching brilliant ideas that had never been done before to save money, and there was a reason why they'd never been done before, but he wouldn't listen to anybody. So, out of all that, everybody decided to say, well, fuck Cornette. He's a shitty booker. Well, I wasn't even the booker. I was delirious. I thought he did a great job, but I was supposed to be in charge of this fiasco, and I wasn't in charge of anything, and they wouldn't listen to me. And that's why we're sitting here talking about it, and I haven't been involved in wrestling for a year, just to be quite perfectly honest.
I mean, yeah, I mean, they got to a point when they stopped doing the iPay-per-views and just went to a video on demand thing a couple of days after the show took place, which was not ideal for the fans, but it meant they were going to get clear quality product, even if it was a few days after. But a couple of shows back, or a couple of months back, I should say, we're going to do this video on demand, one of their big shows, and then they at the last minute said, you know what, we're going to give you a stream of the show for free. And then
Go Fight Live came to him and said, hey, we've really got our shit together now. And they said, well, we can't charge people for this shit because of you. And they said, well, then we'll do it for free. And then they fucked it up again.
Yeah, definitely. moving on.
I could laugh now being removed from it, but that's it became a rib. At the time,
I bet you just wanted to pull your hair.
Oh, I've got holes in my garage wall and skin knuckles over all of these people. It's sad. The guys work hard, and I don't mean to knock the company in that respect. The talent, Delirious, like I said, is a great matchmaker. They have a great crew of talent overall. I wish I could still be involved. I wish a lot of things, but the point is I did not get into that project to work, every day, 24 hours a day, thinking about it, working on it, dwelling on it, whatever, to see Ring of Honor be a promotion that runs twice a month in a rec center in front of 500 people. And that's what it was rapidly becoming. You don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And I felt that our chance to make a first impression had dwindled away. And that's when I get cranky.
That's what I was going to say. You know, the decision was made for whatever reason, to write you off TV via an angle with Jay Lethal.
I made the decision. Yeah.
I was going to say, what happened beyond the scenes?
I'm the first guy in wrestling that ever demoted himself. I sat down with Delirious, and he, we both said that I'm as popular as crotch rot because everybody's blaming me for all these various fucking fiascos. And, I mean, we haven't even touched the surface of fiascos with personnel and office people and just stupid people doing stupid things. And we came up with the idea, well, since I'm as popular as crotch rot, let's take me off television so people don't have a reason to throw bricks at the television. and give them a matchmaker that they will like and respect, and hopefully it will you know, since we can't control what the office is doing, at least from a talent and creative standpoint, we will get ourselves some good publicity because people will like these things. And so I demoted myself, and we didn't want to work the boys, so allegedly the way that it was structured, I was head of creative because I was executive producer of the TV, and Delirious was the booker. In actuality, we worked together as equals. I had the final say and overruled him on anything that he really wanted, very seldom. And so we just switched places. Okay, Hunter, you be head of creative, and I'll just produce the TV because we're not lying to the boys, and I'll take myself off TV as a matchmaker. We'll put Nigel in the spot because the people like and respect Nigel as a former world champion and a great talent. And, you know, that will hopefully make people less mad at Ring of Honor. And son of a gun, that was on October 6th in Rahway, New Jersey, that Jay Lethal tossed me over a table, which I drove all the way to New Jersey, a 1,450-mile round trip to be at 50 years old to be thrown over a fucking lunchroom table. And the next week in Toronto, the people said, oh, it's the greatest show Ring of Honor's ever done, now that Cornette didn't have anything to do with it. We had it booked for 6 weeks.
Yeah, he'd already booked the show.
But it got ridiculous. And then when we ended up in Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania, doing television leading up to Final Battle in an unheated ice rink in the middle of a fucking field in front of 300 people bundled up like they were on an Arctic expedition. I spent 14 hours in that building, and I end up with a wrestler down on the floor and an ambulance coming to haul him off to the hospital to x-ray what may be punctured lungs and broken ribs, and the rest of the office, who had put us there against my wishes and adamant opposition in that place, had all left because they were tired and left me holding the shit in my hand. That was pretty much the last one right there.
I want to talk now about the actual, you know, wrestling side of Ring of Honor. For me, one of the best matches in Ring of Honor during your tenure was a showdown in the Sun match between Davey and Michael Elgin. First off, memories of the match, and do you hold it in as high regard as I do?
Yes, it was a tremendous match, and to be honest, they were starting out to have a good match, and a match that, you know, that I'm sure would have been very good. But about 10 minutes into the thing, if you remember, they did that big suplex off the top rope, and both of them almost landed on their heads, and that really woke them up, both of them. And they started just, from that point on, it was just magic, and people were going, as Pat Patterson used to say, banana. And I have bittersweet memories of the match because it was such a great fucking match, and that should have been the highlight and the news coming out of the weekend. But the news coming out of the weekend was Ring of Honor has another pay-per-view fiasco. Go Fight Live knocks them off the air. So I have bittersweet memories because it was, once again, it was a great match that people's enjoyment of was marred because of technical difficulties, as they say, beyond our control.
I mean, from a wrestling, you know, standpoint, what are the outstanding matches you recall from your tenure there?
Oh my God, you know, that's the thing. The matches are outstanding in Ring of Honor up and down the card. And when you had, you know, the Briscoes and the Kings of Wrestling, when you had Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, when you had Michael Elgin and a variety of opponents, Jay Lethal. And like you said, Davey Richards. We remember Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly in New York.
Yeah.
You know, you can't even just talk about just a handful of superlative matches. That's really, you know, what got me so disheartened on the project and on wrestling as a whole was I thought this was going to be the opportunity to do it right and bring athletic, credible pro wrestling to a mainstream audience in the United States. And suddenly, you know, the things that I thought were going to happen and that I was in many cases told were going to happen didn't take place for reasons why I've not determined. And I had to put up with a little asshole telling us all what to do that had never seen a wrestler in person until he started work the first day. So, I sound down. You know what? For happier things, folks, go to the all-new, all-revised JimCornette.com. I'll just get another shameless plug in there, because at JimCornette.com you can not only read my commentaries and my backlog of columns from Fighting Spirit magazine, which I must give a shout out to the editor, Brian Elliott, the UK's largest and finest pro wrestling and MMA and combat sports publication. You can see that at jimcornette.com. Also, my merchandise, which it's Christmas time. Time to be shopping for the wrestling fan, the Jim Cornette fan, or just the fan of quality products in your household, ladies and gentlemen. Great merchandise. Also, restaurant reviews, pictures, and a whole lot more at jimcornette.com. I plugged the UK tour. My Twitter is at the Jim Cornette. I've got a lot of people following me. Actually, I just saw two of them last night, Stu. They were in a brown Ford LTD with Missouri plates. They were following me. But you can follow me on Twitter at the Jim Cornette and my podcast. I'm not trying to compete with you now, Stu. I'm not trying to run you out of business, but the Jim,
I'm not even competition.
The Jim Cornette Experience on MLW Radio. You can go to MLW.com or you can go to JimCornette.com and click on podcast. It'll take you there. But my my two-parter, we're in the middle of my two-parter with Jim Ross, and it has become the most downloaded podcast ever from MLW Radio in the first 24 hours. So the Jim Cornette Experience, and I'll be doing it live in the UK. And gosh, I'm even doing a Mid-South Wrestling Fan Fest Legends Reunion WrestleMania weekend next year in New Orleans, which is basically my excuse to hang out with the Midnight Express and the Rock and Roll Express.
Nothing wrong with that. Obviously, with all the history yourselves in New Orleans and obviously with them two tag teams, so...
Yeah, that's why I agree to do that, because my wrestling appearances have honestly been very few and far between this year. They have been limited to two. The Midnight and the Rock and Roll and I were honored in Charlotte at the NWA Legends Fan Fest there in August by being inducted in the Hall of Heroes, and I got a chance to catch up with a bunch of my old friends. And then I actually appeared at the Legends of the Ring convention in Monroe, New Jersey, and had a wonderful time talking to the fans in the Northeast back in October, and also shot a couple of videos for RF Video and Kayfabe Commentaries, which will be released next year. And that is pretty much what the involvement I've had in pro wrestling in the past year, otherwise, has been doing my own projects from home. And it has been a richly enjoyed vacation after 31 years straight without a break in the wrestling business at all facets and levels of it. Sometimes you can get tired of eating steak for dinner every night, you know?
One last thing I want to do just before I start asking questions that I actually got off someone else for you. But you mentioned them earlier, the Kings of Wrestling. When you're in Ring of Honor, you know, they're a massive part of the product. Just give us a quick opinion on Chris and Claudio and how you think Chris was handled up in WWE with obviously his recent release, etc.
Well, shitty. Here's the thing, and now I hear that they're trying to put more emphasis on tag teams. They signed the best tag team in the business. The Briscoes and the Kings of Wrestling were the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express of this generation. The Kings actually had the edge on the Briscoes, I think, in terms of tag team continuity, because the Briscoes are wild men, and they love to do their own thing, and you can't write that. You can't make those guys up. They are tremendous inside and outside the ring. But the Kings, I think, were the best tag team in all of wrestling anywhere. And they sign them and break them up. I think both of them are incredibly talented, but I think the sum of the parts would have been greater than the whole of the two, whatever that phrase is. They should have been a tag team. They could be main event players. They can talk. They can work. I don't know what they were expecting from Chris Hero when they signed him, but Chris was the leader of the team and the more experienced of the two. And if anything, was probably the more versatile performer. And they can't find any. As Kenny Boland, my old friend Kenny Boland, remarked one time when they let Matt Morgan go because the writers didn't have anything for him, fire the fucking writers. What the fuck? I mean.
There's the stuff with Chris. It's twofold. You know, it's apparently they asked him to get in shape and he didn't, and then he's apparently got an attitude.
But you know,
problem,
here's the thing: it's not like he's a sloppy, fat, obese guy. He's a guy. Bobby Eaton outperformed everybody in the wrestling business nightly for decades and never had a muscle that showed. Some people just aren't going to look like Hercules or Mr. America. I don't think Chris Hero was in bad physical condition, and I think you do need alternate body types.
Yeah.
And I'm not hung up on size, and I don't want people to take steroids. I wanted Kevin Steen to lose some weight, and it wouldn't have hurt El Generico to gain a little. But seriously, if anybody can look at Chris Hero's overall performance and say there's not a spot for him in a wrestling promotion, I think they're fucking nuts.
I totally agree. Moving on to these questions by someone that works with me on my website, etc., Adam Timmins. He's got four questions for you, and I just want to, like I say, before we go any further, just don't shoot the messenger. I'm just reading them out.
All right, you're prepping me early. I mean, all right.
Well, his first one, it comes in with both barrels. He's put, do you accept any responsibility for the creative downturn that Ring of Honor suffered between 11 and obviously 2011-2012?
Now, wait, I lost you around the bin because of your accent.
Oh, sorry.
Just a little slower.
No problem. He just said, do you accept any responsibility for the creative downturn that Ring of Honor suffered between 2011 and 2012?
Well, I think we've partially covered that in my previous comments, but you know, once again, I don't think it's the best work I've ever done, but we were having enough of a pain in the ass with the office every day. I used to scream at Gary Juster on the phone, you know, we're trying to write the television program. Can you leave me out of your petty fucking problems that are entirely preventable, to alliteratively give a bunch of P words there? But once again, I'm sorry, but I think if anybody goes back and actually sees the programs and looks at the pay-per-views and looks at the shows, I don't see the live event people being able to scream any louder. I don't see particularly any glaring problems otherwise than things that were unfortunately sometimes forced upon us by people not being available, suddenly becoming unavailable, not being able to do business with them, or budgetary limitations. Otherwise than that, I think the work that everybody did from a performance and creative and presentation show standpoint was phenomenal. You know, once again, there's Jerry Lawler told me this 30 years ago. He says, well, everybody always says they want to see new wrestlers, and then we bring in new wrestlers, and they say, well, where's the wrestlers we used to see?
That sounds familiar.
You can't please everybody, and I know that in some distant universe, in some distant galaxy in the universe, there is a planet on which reside intelligent beings that would rather see the Super Smash Brothers wrestle than Mike Bennett and Mike Mondo and Matt Hardy, but it don't exist in this world. And once again, we were trying for Ring of Honor to be bigger than an independent wrestling show in front of 500 people in a rec center. And to do that, you need talent that not only are experienced and not only look the part, but also that the average fan will take seriously. And, you know, when you put guys up with a name like Matt Hardy or a work ethic like Mike Mondo or a tremendous future upside potential like Mike Bennett that we saw from the start, and now people are starting to realize it, but since we're smarter than most of those people because we've been in the business 30 years, we saw it first. It's not calling anybody names. It's just stating facts. When you've got guys like that and they're complaining because we don't have the guy that looks like a high school kid or the guys that wear pajamas and play pro wrestler on our television program, we're trying not to run the guy off that works at the gas station in Des Moines as well as the independent wrestling fan. We were trying to bring everybody together, and it seemed that they wanted to draw sides and say, well, oh my God, they're going to use Matt Hardy. Oh, the company's coming to an end. Oh, Jesus. More people know who Matt Hardy is when you put his name on a television program or a poster. And it's not like Matt has two artificial hips and is 60 years old and can't wrestle. It got ridiculous. It got to where there were factions among the fans. The fans who had never seen Ring of Honor before and would come to the shows would leave beaming going, this is the greatest wrestling we've ever seen in our life. And the old-time Ring of Honor fans that thought that their private club had been invaded would say, oh, my God, now they're using this guy and this guy and this guy instead of my name. Pick a name, the favorite name. We used to joke about the Super Smash Brothers because somebody actually said the best tag
team in the
world was the Super Smash Brothers. And I know that I've met these guys personally a couple times. I don't know them personally. I'm not trying to knock them. But they're two guys wearing pajamas playing pro wrestler to the average guy working down at the corner at fucking, car repair place. And that's just the way it is. And they picked the gimmick. I didn't. Wasn't my idea for him to look like that. I remember back when Dusty Rhodes would say when some, you know, two guys were in the ring on television that were really shitting the bed or just having a stinky match or just looked stupid. And he would, you know, of course he would say, oh, I shouldn't have booked this. He's like, people at home be going, this is bullshit. And then they'd be going, when will this bullshit be off of my television?
Moving on to your second question. If you could go back in time, given the knowledge you have now, you know, what, if anything, would you do that was different in Ring of Honor?
Oh, in Ring of Honor?
Yeah, of course.
Not started it, the whole idea to begin with, so that I wouldn't get disappointed. I just kind of left it alone instead of trying to get Sinclair Broadcasting to buy it and get my hopes all up that this was going to be a great thing.
Was you involved in that then, obviously?
Yes, I'm
Sinclair coming in. Yeah.
I'm the one that wrote the proposal that they liked so much on how we could work together and they could put Ring of Honor on their air that they ended up buying the whole company. And then over the next year and a half, they did about fucking 10% of the shit that I wrote in the proposal that needed to be done to make it a successful organization. So what do you think? It became a rib on me. And then everybody was looking at me like, oh, God, he's going to be great.
You saying that you wrote the proposal and then they did 10%. It's like that old adage, was it, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah, well, the horse came to the pond, but he didn't slurp much up.
He's also asking, who was the one guy you wanted to bring in but couldn't for whatever reason?
You know, well, actually, there were a number of people that we didn't even consider bringing in because we just knew we couldn't do it, you know, for a matter of citizenship or geography or money or whatever. I'm a huge fan of Prince Devitt.
Yeah.
But that would just, you know, between he's English, but he has a full-time job in Japan and we're going to give him.
He's Irish.
Wait, okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. He's from the UK over there, but he worked.
No. Japan. He's not from the UK.
Is Ireland? Okay, I don't know the geography. I'm from Kentucky, goddammit. Please give me. The point is, he's a great fucking talent, and we're going to bring him to the United States for two fucking shows a month? No. You know, I actually, I'd even talked to Bret Hart about Harry Smith because I thought he's a great talent, but I was embarrassed to tell Bret that, well, we could probably pay him trance money and work him twice a month. I thought things were going to, you know, evolve better. But, I mean, there's a number of international talents. And there's a few guys, obviously, that I would have wanted to use in this country if we could either afford them or they weren't tied down. But to say that there was just one guy that we tried to bring in but couldn't is not really there.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Devitt, obviously, one of his cohorts over in Japan is Carl Anderson, and obviously I know you haven't been following Ring of Honor in the last 12 months, but they've been using him.
I follow, and yes, and see, Carl Anderson, the beautiful thing is, Carl Anderson lives in Cincinnati, which is like 100 miles from where I'm sitting right now. And so that's another thing that Delirious and I had always wanted to do since the start was have more Japanese presence. You know, we actually...
Next question.
Yeah, we actually... That was from the start. We wanted to establish our talent first, obviously, our full-time American talent first, but that was definitely something that we had in mind, to do a War of the Worlds pay-per-view, bring in, you know, the top Japanese guys to face the top Ring of Honor guys. We thought there'd be a tremendous market for that. But then when we found out not only how much it costs to get paperwork to bring a Japanese professional athlete to this country, even for just a handful of appearances, combined with the fact that there wasn't no way Sinclair Broadcasting was going to turn loose of that money, that didn't happen. And we tried to do some things with various people like Carl Anderson that were Japanese stars but lived here in America. And sometimes they have exclusive contracts and sometimes they don't. And sometimes we would want them on a big show where they were in the middle of a Japanese tour. So it just over the last year started coming together that we were able to, Delirious has been able to capitalize on some of the ideas that we had originally, some of the inroads that we made, some of the inquiries that we made. And yeah, he's definitely in favor of fleshing that out. And I think that'll be a benefit, you know, to everybody. So, yeah, that's something also just, you know, we wanted that from the start, and it's just slowly slowly now as they go into 3 years coming up next spring, summer, being able to be worked out.
I mean, yeah, that was Adam's final question. He's put, you know, one of the key parts of Ring of Honor's growth was its booking of Japanese talent. Why wasn't this resurrected during your spell as booker? But obviously, you've just covered that. Obviously, that time around, it was a money issue.
I can flesh it out also. That's almost the Japanese involvement previously is almost the reason why there was almost no Ring of Honor. Because they went too far and too whole hog with it and spent a lot of money, and it was becoming diminishing returns because it was becoming less special, even though the matches were always great and the fans enjoyed the matches. You can't imagine the cost between airfare from Japan, obviously payoffs for the top stars, and more importantly, the paperwork fees to satisfy the government. And actually, we found out something, and I don't even think I'm going to tell a secret here. But we found out the way that they were finally able to get Japanese talent to Toronto is not the paperwork requirements that there was. It was like $5,000 cheaper to get a Japanese professional athlete to work in Toronto than it was in New York City. And it's a long, complicated procedure, and don't ask me to explain it because I don't understand it either. But so we were finally able to find that out and get that done. But yeah, there was a lot of money spent in the past years on Japanese talent, and it was becoming very burdensome, and that's why the process was cut out, and we wanted to bring it back on a limited basis where it would remain special and work out well for everybody, and that's what Delirious is still trying to do.
Fair enough. So before we round things up and then get on to the plethora of plugs, etc., even though we've had them a few times.
I've pretty much plugged all my plethoras. Yeah. We'll run over them again. But,
Just a little bit of a word association, just in case of me give you a name or whatever, and then you just, the first thing that pops in your head.
Okay.
So this should be fun. So we start off with that man again, Davey Richards.
Oh, God, word association, complicated. He's a complicated guy.
Yeah. Eddie Edwards?
Prince of a guy. I enjoyed every bit of my time working with Eddie Edwards, and what a great and dedicated and tough athlete. He's wrestled with broken arms. He's wrestled with injuries. I mean, you know, can't say enough good about Eddie Edwards.
Chris Hero?
You know, confusing. How can you see this guy and his passion for wrestling and his performance and you have a wrestling promotion and you can't come up with a spot for him? Very confusing.
And Kevin Steen?
Problem child.
Kerry Silkin?
One of my best friends, actually, the most honest and most genuine promoter in wrestling.
Yeah, that covers obviously a big
actually
big
that
wide
may,
range.
That
well,
may be it? Like being the nicest guy in prison. It may be not be that much of a compliment, but
yeah, Gabe Sapolsky,
creative, very creative guy. Very, I understand his high strung hyperactivity and. While there has been conflict in the past between him and Ring of Honor, we actually tried to resolve that at one point, but he was still mad over a variety of things. But I like Gabe and don't have any problem with him. I think he's done a great job.
Just before I carry on, quick going back to Gabe. Obviously, you know, when Ring of Honor started, he started off with Rob Feinstein. Obviously, his issue happened and Gabe took over. And then, but I don't think I've ever been let into whatever happened, why Gabe actually left Ring of Honor. Can you shed any light on that?
It was a decision by Kerry Silkin. I don't think, I'm not, you know, revealing any office secrets. Gabe was the booker from the start. Gabe did not have ownership. And at some point, when you have the owner wanting one thing and the booker wanting the other thing, the owner usually wins. And that's what it was.
Fair enough. Next name, Adam Pearce.
Great talent. I thought he did a good job booking, even though he had no experience before, and he kind of got thrown into it with very little notice. Very dedicated to the business. Great talker. Actually, I'll give you this one, and we'll close on this one, because this will be a nice little story to close on. Yep. Adam Pearce was supposed to be Kevin Kelly's color commentator when the program went on the air. And the deal had been made, but since Adam, the reason why Adam was removed from his booking position was because he did not get along well with two gentlemen that ran the and worked in the office, a gentleman named Sid Eck and another one named Ross Abrams, who was the merchandise man that had been there since the start. They didn't get along. It ain't really much of a secret. And when Kerry had to pick, he picked his two office guys versus his booker, and that was, you know, that was that. And but at the same time, we needed a fresh look for television, and I wanted Kevin Kelly, who was not only an experienced wrestling broadcaster, not only with the WWF, but a variety of smaller organizations over his career, but also had had tremendous background in training and talent development and the website for the WWE and worked at a high level. And I wanted him to have a color commentator that was an ex-wrestler, but that knew the product and was not old and over the hill and not a comedy figure, but a guy that was well-spoken and could be taken as an ex-jock that knew what he was talking about, but didn't have the WWE or TNA taint on him. And Adam Pearce was the guy. And we told Kerry Silkin that's what we wanted to do, and he said it's business, and he has no problem with Adam, and he'd shake hands and all would be forgiven. And Sid said the same thing, and Ross was a whiny little pussy baby and said, oh, I don't like him, and he threatened me. Well, you know, he threatened to knock him out because he was a fucking prick, right? If you didn't employ anybody that ever threatened somebody in a wrestling business, I'm going to knock you out because you're a fucking prick, then there wouldn't be a wrestling business. So we had gone to the guy as a courtesy to say that this is what we needed to do for the good of the television program. We hope you'll be on board as a favor to us. Not that we thought we needed his approval, because he was, after all, just the merchandise weasel that sold the fucking T-shirts. But 2 days after we went to him to say that, he went over our heads to Joe Koff and said that he was going to file a human resources complaint with Sinclair Broadcasting if Adam Pearce was hired. So he was not hired. And this was not a knock on Nigel, because Nigel was not in consideration at the time, because Nigel was still under contract to TNA. So fortunately, with 13 days left before we went on the air with the program, the first taping rather, Nigel got out of his contract and was able to take the job. When we decided to move Nigel to matchmaker to replace my position, because people hated me worse than goddamn Attila the Hun, at that point, Delirious and I both went to Joe Koff and said, we need a color guy, and we would like that color guy to be Adam Pearce. And after all this time, is there not something that we can do? And Joe Koff told us, yes, Ross will just have to get over it. And, you know, you guys go ahead and book Adam because he's the best man for the job. So we did that. I gave Adam Pearce my word. He had the job, and I gave him his first two dates. And then Ross Abrams heard about it and, over Joe Koff's head, called Human Resources and told him that we had hired a guy that had threatened his life and his family and wanted to kill him, and there was going to be all kinds of shit and probably a lawsuit. And they called Joe Koff and told him to call us and tell us to unbook Adam Pearce. And this was last year, right after I left and right before the holidays. So this little weasel that sells merchandise, that had a cushy job sitting around diddling himself, stuffing envelopes, fucked one of the boys, fucked the television program, fucked the company, fucked the product, all because he's a whiny little pussy baby that couldn't get over shit that had been said to him in the past. But karma comes around, because he was just recently fired for stealing from the company. That's Ross Abrams, by the way. A-B-R-A-M-S. Ross, if you hear this and you want to sue me, go ahead, you little fucker, because I got a hole in my garage wall from the times that you fucked my television program. So I would love to have a problem with you, you little pussy prick. So on that one, I think that's a good one to close up, isn't it?
Yeah, but is it possible just to do these last four?
Oh, jeez, now see, you got me all wound up. Now I'm going to knock more people. Let's go.
No, I don't think you will.
My wife is going to want me to go to the grocery. Let's do it quick.
Yeah. Not these ones. We've got Nigel McGuinness.
Nigel is a great guy. I've really enjoyed working with Nigel. He had not done commentary much, if at all, at the time he got that spot. But Kevin worked with him closely, and he prepared and took notes, and he really improved and became the best announce team, I think, you know, in the business at that point in time.
And we have Delirious.
Can't say enough good about him. Probably, in addition to working with a couple of the editors and production people in the company that we had, I've never had so much fun working with anybody as I did with Delirious. Going back to when I was on the booking team with Kevin Sullivan and learning from him in WCW, he eats, sleeps, and breathes the product. He works his ass off 24 hours a day. He's always thinking about how to make it better. And, you know, I thought we were a great team, and I loved the opportunity to work with him.
And just the initials, Ring of Honor?
Ring of Honor, tons of potential that may yet still someday be realized.
And the final one, which is Colt Cabana.
Well, I guess he knows as he wants to be a comedian. When somebody mentions his name and people laugh, I guess he's getting what he wants.
He does do some stand-up as well, apparently. He's a big fan of comedy and stuff like that. So well, goes to, you know, a lot of shows himself.
You know, and once again, I'm going to do a one-man show where I'm going to tell a bunch of funny and ribald stories. It's not stand-up comedy, per se. Even Mick Foley, when I did the show with him last night, and he is brilliantly funny and fantastic presentation, but he says he doesn't know what to call it because it's not really stand-up. It's not really Q&As. He tells really hilarious wrestling stories in a funny way about unique and colorful personalities and things that have happened to him in his life. And it doesn't all relate around wrestling. And that's kind of sort of what I'm going to be doing. But I don't make mockery of the business or bad examples of the business. And I don't have the need, like the kid that pulls his pants down on the playroom and shows his willy whacker to everybody just to get attention. to do these things. So, you know, I think my show and Colt's show will be radically different. But you can check it out if you like. Folks in the United Kingdom and Ireland can come over too by going to jimcornettelive.co.uk or just go to jimcornette.com and click on appearances and events and you get all the information. Tickets are on sale now. I believe I mentioned that. My Twitter is at the Jim Cornette. My website is jimcornette.com. I'm supposed to be retired, and I'm busier than I have been in ages. I don't know how this works.
Yeah, well, that's it then, Jim. Thanks for coming on and being so generous with your time. Really appreciate it and really enjoyed it. People who know me who have been speaking to about doing this will know I've been shitting bricks. just preparing and thinking about the possibility of talking to your good self. But, yeah, really enjoyed it. And, like I say, I really appreciate you coming on. And I'm actually will be coming to see you. My ticket's already been bought the day they got released. So I'll be coming to see you in Birmingham when you come over. So really looking forward to that myself.
Well, Stu, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And through the whole interview, I could not tell that you were nervous, as they used to say down south here, shaking like a dog shitting peach seeds. I appreciate you having me on. I look forward to seeing everybody there, including you in person in February, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you, Stu, very much.
Thanks a lot.